So I come up with a name. I'm thinking, what should I name it? What? Frankensteiner!
The Frankensteiner! That's what you're calling the move, huh?
This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Rick Flair and I see eye to eye on very few things. He likes the fast lane. I like the double cross ramp.
The next time you see me, Terry Funk, it'll be live in Troy, New York, in front of thousands of people.
I don't want your belt, that gold belt. I want your pride.
National television, I quit. So tonight, Terry Funk, it's no man's land.
Grab your plunder and open the pay window. It's time for Survey Says.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling. Welcome to Survey Says. Tim Capel here, joined with Andy Savage Helene. Andy, how are you on this fine fall evening?
I am jacked up, as always.
All jacked up, not in Jacksonville tonight, because tonight we are coming to you live on tape from the RPI Fieldhouse in Troy, New York, I guess otherwise known as the Houston Fieldhouse. Because we are talking a little Clash of the Champions. This is, in fact, Clash of the Champions number 9, New York Knockout. Somewhat of an unusual episode for us, focused on one show, which we've done that a time or two, but never dipped our toes into the Clash of the Champions pool.
Yeah,
I was somewhat resistant, as you know, Andy, to this idea, but you've kind of been winning me over here. What made you think that this show might be a good one for us to tackle? I'm putting this on you.
All right. Well, I've wanted to do Clash of the Champions for like a while, because I'm into all those ones from like 93, 94, and I've been trying to hook you on some of the goofy stuff, but I thought since we both had Flair and Funk as our number one match from the Great American Bash ranking that we did a couple episodes ago with Jordan Duncan. I was like, All right, it makes sense. We're coming up to November. We had October was a Halloween theme show. August, going back there, we did a Road Wild show that corresponded with August. And then even back, I guess the first time we did it was July. We did a Beach Blast with Jenny Smith. So I'm like, right. Well, there's November. There's, WCW Mayhem, World War III, a bunch of those. Or there's Clash of the Champions, because a lot of those fell in November. So it just seemed like this one made the most sense, more than those other shows.
Yeah, and I mean, they did some early Starcades in November too, but we sort of already shot our wad on Starcade in about our, second episode, I think. Yeah. Although it was a lot of fun watching all of those just back to back and blowing through the granddaddy of them all. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense to get a November time to show in there. And calling back to a match that we liked a whole lot in Flair Funk from that Great American Bash 89. So, and we also talked the year 1989 with Todd Weber several episodes back now. And always a good year to revisit. So I thought this was a great idea to start with. I know I have been somewhat resistant, to say the least, to doing some Clash of the Champions. There's just so many, you know? There's, 35 of these things? And I guess my deal is that Clash, I think of as kind of a relic of the WCW from just before my time. They did the last Clash right before I started really regularly watching. So it was just never my bag. Do you have any memories, Andy, of watching Clashes growing up? Was this something you were super into? Like, did it compare to something like, I don't know, Saturday night's main event from the WWF?
I know for a fact there was one that I watched, and I even recorded it. It was Clash of the Champions, January 97. It fell on my birthday, So I was super pumped to watch that because it had Ultimo Dragon and Dean Malenko, and it had another one of those. And Sullivan matches that went all over the building. But I saw that one with the Paul Gilmartin DDP Diamond Cutter. So I saw the last two for sure. But I think I tuned in and caught part of one from 95. It wasn't the Reviving Elbow one, but I think it had a big match with like Hogan in a tag match with like Sting. And it might have had, I think it had Dave Sullivan hanging out in there.
Oh, somewhere. Wow. Yeah, I could tell you, I never saw a single one of these as it aired at the time. So what I have seen of Clash, which I guess I wouldn't say it's a lot, but, you know, the major matches and the good stuff that I've been pointed to here and there. But most of this is, like, especially this show, I'd seen the main event before, but, you know, not with a lot of context and not remembering a lot about it going into this watch. So this first time I've seen it end to end, and why don't we get started here? So
yeah, it's the first time I've seen it end to end too, because I have some like DVD that has the Flair Funk match on it, and that's the only thing that's the only thing I've seen prior to this watching.
Gotcha. So speaking of Flair and Funk, that is how we open the show with two quick promos from both guys. Right away, what I took away from this was how much character they exuded in these little quick promos, just between the clothing and the body language. It just says so much about both of them and their characters, even in saying so little. So I definitely appreciated that, even if I had gone in really blind, not knowing that these two had been feuding. Those two quick opening promos, I thought, set it up nicely and got me pumped for the main event. So off to a pretty good start there. Our first match is going to be the Freebirds gag, the Michael Hayes, Jimmy Garvin version, of course, taking on the Road Warriors. So started out with a good promo, not opening with a match I'm super enthusiastic about. We hate the Freebirds, right?
Well, I hate to like throw this out there, but they're actually kind of winning me over a little bit, no. Even though this match isn't a good example of that. But like, I don't know. I think it was because of that, a year ago or whatever, when we did Super Brawl, and it's like they came out with DDP and they had that Big Daddy Dink, and I kind of liked that. It kind of fit, because aren't they supposed to be like 80s rockers or something in this version with what is it, Jimmy Garvin?
Yeah.
And Michael Hayes are supposed to be almost like 80s like rock guys instead of the Southern group that they were with. Was it Buddy Roberts? And Terry Gordy?
Terry Gordy, yeah.
It's like a different version. I guess so.
The reinvention, you could say something for. I guess they were too before my time. I just, even being from the South, I just don't get it with these guys. And the matches are just so like cookie cutter, especially at this point. Like I shouldn't paint them with that type of brush just for the entirety of their career, which admittedly I've not seen much of, but the Freebirds I have seen like late 80s and in the 90s when they're pretty washed up and doing the
maybe it's just DDP makes everything better, so that's why DDP I like does make that everything.
Even doing this butt rock gimmick that they have now with DDP, I can tolerate it, but here, not so. At least they do get out of there pretty fast. I mean, it's just a little over 5-minute match.
But then also, not many people have good matches with the Road Warriors. I can't really count that many on my hand that I actually like. I think
that is true. Yeah, that is true. If anything, I guess I was just hoping this would be more of a like a Road Warrior squash.
Yeah.
it's just the 1989 Freebirds. Who cares? So, but it ends in a DQ, right? When Hawk launches poor Tommy Young, and yeah, he DQs him. Not the hottest opener. You know, that's not really what you want to see in your opening match, a DQ finish like that. But as I am somewhat fond of saying, I found it somewhat inoffensive, if nothing else. So moving on, we've got...
It was better than Kurosawa and Hawk, I think.
It was better than Kurosawa and Hawk. I'll give it that. This is our measuring stick, I take it.
Maybe.
Keep that in mind. Our hosts for this show are Jim Ross and Gordon Solie. Gordon Solie doing color. I always kind of like seeing Gordon Solie. I don't know. Call me a goober. I don't know. But it's just he brings just a little bit of like fake class to these shows.
Fake. Yeah.
Even though he's like probably sipping on his vodka and he's keeping it together, at least if he is. I mean, what can you say? But I like them doing commentary for this. I also took note of the set at this point as well. Very dark, I noticed. There's about 4,000 people in attendance, according to my extensive research. I don't know how many the Houston Fieldhouse houses, but they keep it pretty dark. And the stage... Now, did you pick up on this? I thought that the stage looked like the Carbonite Chamber from Empire Strikes Back.
It did, because it had the lighted up steps. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And those steps are huge. They're like giant blocks that we'll see later on. Like, some of these guys, it's so steep, they sort of struggle walking down the steps. But somewhat unique set. I don't know. Did they bring this out for a lot of Clash shows, or were these all pretty unique setups? Do you recall?
I haven't seen too many of these older ones in full, but I know at some of those 80s shows they didn't really have sets, but they just had stuff like that. Like, wasn't the... I'm trying to think back to Starrcade 89. It was like... I just remember big pedestals on either side where they announced all four guys in the Iron Man or something. Mm. That kind of looked like in, what was that, Superman, where they got Zod and the other people kind of standing there on like little...
Before they get taken by the Phantom Zone.
Yeah, like when they're on trial or something.
Man, I wish the Freebirds got taken by the Phantom Zone. Can you imagine they're like pushing up against the little pyramid flying through space? They're just in this triangle. Jimmy Garvin. Get Terry Gordy, cram him in there too. They don't do a whole lot with this theme of New York Knockout. I don't know why this took place in New York, but it does. And the crowd is pretty game for all this throughout the show. They at least gave a pretty rousing Freebird suck rant or chant, excuse me. So I appreciated that. And we kind of kill some time before our next match because we've got Jim Ross interviewing Terry Funk and Gary Hart. I thought this interview was kind of telling in the sense of what's going to come in the main event. It sort of was, I don't know, it was sort of telegraphing how the post-match stuff that we're going to see goes down.
And don't embarrass Texas here tonight. All of Texas is watching. All of Texas is watching, brother.
Yeah. And I guess I get why they did it, but I don't know. I wish it had been more of an intense or just straight up hype segment for those two.
I thought it was weird. Gary Hart's like wearing some kind of cashmere sweater, and then Terry Funk's like a cowboy, and they don't really fit together.
No, they're somewhat ill-fitting, definitely. And we're not going to see too much of Terry Funk after this show. So he kind of one of those fly-by-night sort of dudes with all his little stints in the various major promotions. But a little goes a long way with him. And next out, we've got a somewhat young Bill Apter, Pro Wrestling Illustrated. He is going to be presenting two awards here. I have in my notes that young Bill Apter looks like a ventriloquist dummy.
Those are some awesome notes.
He still kind of looks like that, but it was, I don't know, maybe he had some weird stage makeup or something. That he was rather ghoulish, I guess, is my point. Poor Bill Apter. Anyway, he presents Sting with the Most Popular Wrestler Award and Ric Flair with the Wrestler of the Decade Award. This was sort of neat to me, I thought, because they're coming off of... They were in that main event tag match against Muta, and Terry Funk from Halloween Havoc, right? In the Thunder Cage.
Yeah.
So Sting and Flair had been on the same page for a little bit, teaming up, and this kind of is a neat way of calling back to that, reminding us that these two, for a change, are not going to come to blows, even though they are in the same frame together.
Yeah, because even going back to that Great American Bash, after the Funk Flair match, I think Muta came out, and then I think Sting did too. That's when they had the big like four-way brawl.
Right.
Yeah, it's going back quite a ways for those guys.
Mm-hmm. Flair cuts the promo with the blood all over him mixed with the green mist. It has that kind of gross pea soup-looking effect on his appearance there. So, yeah, we've been running with this feud, this angle, and these various factions and strange allegiances for a bit now, and I like it. Fun little promo by Woman. Not a whole lot to it, but she's putting over her guys that we're about to see. Doom 1 and Doom 2. And they are squashing Eddie Gilbert, who I was pretty complimentary of when we first talked the year 1989. And Tommy Wildfire Rich, they're just sort of in jobber mode here. And they get their shit pushed in by Doom. How about that? Doom, I will say that I am not a huge fan of, even on their best day. But the anonymous masked, like, black guy version just kind of sucks. I hate to say it. I mean,
I kind of like their entrance, though. It's just...
Yeah. That's kind of the best thing about them, right? And, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love Ron Simmons, but you know how I feel about Butch Reed. And it just, this team is just better on paper than it is in practice. So,
well, I think they got kind of a little bit better maybe when they got rid of the masks. Or maybe I'm just kind of thinking they did. I don't remember.
No, I would agree they did get better when they got rid of the masks. But I still don't. I don't know. I've just never been as into them as some people are. And I've tried. I mean, I've watched a ton of Doom matches just saying, okay, what is it about these guys? And they should work, and I should respond to this. And I just, they just kind of bore me. we have our next match. let's take a step back here because this is a lot. This is Jim Cornette interviewing the Steiner brothers. And, you know, they're feuding with, or I guess Woman is still feuding with Rick. Remember, she was, of course, Robin Green, his girlfriend, and that ended very badly for him. Scott has been brought in, their tag team. Scott is, of course, like the straight man, and Rick is Rick. I don't even know how to describe this promo. It just really needs to be heard. Rick is just acting a fool and coming across as very special. Scott is trying to keep it together. Like, you can tell he's about to crack up. And sort of does at a few moments. So, it was interesting to me that they're putting over the Frankensteiner, of course, that Scott had started using. Very spectacular looking move for the time.
Yeah, the Frankensteiner.
Yes. And I guess, so is this where it gets named? Like, Rick Steiner is talking about the origin of the Frankensteiner and says they were something about they were watching Frankenstein around Halloween and Scott was doing this move and somehow or another he decided it should be called the Frankensteiner. So Rick Steiner has named the Frankensteiner here. Kind of a big moment, right? Should be anyway. Yeah. Unless they already did this and they're acting like they're just talking about it for the first time. But no, that Rick Steiner promo is positively insane. And I would encourage anyone to check it out.
Man, I think he's like the highlight of the show for me.
Rick Steiner. So Rick Steiner is your MVP of the show.
Yeah, already. I've already called it.
You're calling it. Well, we're going to see them in action pretty soon. So we will monitor that situation as it develops. We do have another match, though. It's the Dynamic Dudes, of Shane Douglas and Johnny Ace skateboarding their way down to the ring to battle the Midnight Express.
I like this match a lot.
I did, too. Yeah. I could have used some more of this, if anything. I mean, I know people bust on the Dynamic Dudes, whatever, but the match is real solid.
Yeah, they were doing some good like high flying stuff. Like, didn't Shane Douglas do like one of those like what's it, suicide dive?
Or like, yeah, he did an awesome dive from the ring to the outside onto one of the Midnights that looked just tremendous. And I guess so. If there's any kind of backstory to this, it seemed like so Jim Cornette was supposedly mentoring the Dynamic Dudes while he's still managing the Midnights. And of course that comes into play at the ending, at the finish, when he turns on the Dynamic Dudes and gives the Midnights the win. But a lot of good stuff, a lot of good work in this match. Of course, we get more karate fighting from Stan Lane, my fave.
You know what I was thinking during this match? I think Stan Lane should have been huge. And I was trying to think of like reasons like why he wasn't, or like, I guess I was just really analyzing like Stan Lane during this match. And it seems like he's really awesome. He's really crisp in there and he's like, you know, doing like, yeah, like the karate fighter stuff. And he's got a real good moveset, but I think he just, like,
he's got a good look too.
Yeah, like, I don't know, maybe the name Stan Lane.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's Sweet just Stan Lane, I guess. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just kind of generic name, or
I don't know. They could repackage him. They could change it. He kind of looks like he's still recognizably, you know, doing the things that make him so good in the first place.
Yeah.
Or it could be one of those situations though where, I don't know, people talk about how, and this is a bad comparison, but follow me. Like the Smoking Guns, you know, Billy Gunn was supposed to be the breakout singles guy, had a good look, enormous human being, could really move, and it just, he could never, like, put it together as a singles star. And maybe it's a similar situation. But it is odd to me that of those two, and I don't think there was one breakout guy over the other. They seem like they were such a solid tag team just gelled so well. You couldn't even conceive of really breaking them up. But when Bobby Eaton goes single, it's kind of like, really? He's going to be the singles dude from this team? And don't get me wrong. I mean, I love Bobby Eaton. It's just compared to Stan Lane, you know, just looks-wise, sort of surprising.
Lane kind of looks like a shorter, not as ripped, like Lex Luger.
Mm-hmm.
Or like a more compact-sized Lex Luger that can maybe move
around
a little bit
better.
Thing.
I thought the exact same. Shane Douglas does kind of an Olympic slam at one point. I thought that was interesting. It was like not quite a Samoan drop and not quite a suplex, so that's what it reminded me of. But, yeah, this goes about 9 minutes, and as I said, I could have used a few more minutes. I was digging that a whole lot.
There's one other thing, too, with this match that almost, like, I kind of bugged me, is, like, throughout the match, they kept doing that bird's eye view, like, camera.
Oh, yeah.
And if you just looked at everybody's shoulders and head, everybody in the match looked the same. They're all, like, white guys about the same height with the same mullet. And so, like...
same mullet.
Far away like that, I think Lane and Eaton, they look the same. And then the dudes look the same. But if you don't look at their trunks or anything, you just look at them from maybe even the waist up.
Just interchangeable white guys.
Yeah.
With the same mullet.
Yeah.
I will say, though, when Cornette cracks Shane with that tennis racket, that sounded pretty awesome. I mean, it's a pretty lame finish when he would do, like, how much damage is a tennis racket gonna really do to somebody, I guess, compared to like chair shots and stuff that, I mean, we would see even at the time. But I get that it's his gimmick. I just wanted to point out that the sound alone was very impressive here, if nothing else. So yeah, Bobby Eaton getting the win for his team.
August Greedley
himself, no doubt. So what have we got next? Are we going into another match yet? Yes, because we've got. Here's a squash that I was looking for. It is Dr. Diaper, Dr. Death, Steve Williams, Jim Ross' favorite, taking apart the Super Destroyer, who I understand was Jack Victory here in a mask. Yeah, just like a little over a minute, and... Dr. Diaper crushes him with that running power slam. Looks awesome. And then Jim Ross leaves to change his pants.
One spot that I liked in the match was when Dr. Diaper, he hooks him with some clothesline, and he like flies out of the ring, and he hits some random table and then falls off the table, and you see the table like kind of fall over. It's like,
yeah,
I didn't even know a table was there. I don't know.
It was almost a table spot for 1989. I don't think the table broke, but yeah, he kind of wiped out on it. That was interesting.
I did write down one thing about that match that I saw on Wikipedia, that Jack Victory, this is the fourth time he's been a masked wrestler at a Clash of the Champions, because it said first he was Russian Assassin number 2. Then he was an awesome, I guess, I want to see this version, but he had a cool name of the Blackmailer.
Okay.
Then he was the Terrorist, and now he's the Super Destroyer.
The Blackmailer and the Terrorist. So, up to this point, he's already been these different masked characters. This is only our 9th Clash of the Champions.
Yeah.
So, wow. I wonder if he gets any more appearances under his belt. That's we'll have to do some research on that and see how the Blackmailer and the Terrorist fared.
Yeah.
Not too interested in, you know, Russian Assassin number 2. I would imagine there's a Russian Assassin number 1. Perhaps it was a tag match, but Ooh, you know, maybe they took on Cruel Connection.
I was just thinking that same thing.
Okay. All right. We'll keep an eye on that. Norman the Lunatic. So he comes down to the ring dressed as Santa. The only thing I know about Norman the Lunatic is that earlier in the year, he had a really, like, surprisingly good match with Brian Pillman.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the show, but that's, like, the only thing I know about this dude. He kind of, right here, he kind of looks like, now, I think you'll be able to follow this one, but you remember Arturo from the show Sliders?
Yes.
Okay, so he looks like that dude cosplaying as Santa Claus.
You know what? Way back on the Blog of Doom, like, for years, I talked to Glenny on there. And, like, I didn't really know anything about him, but he sounded smart. So every time I read his post, I read it like he was Arturo.
Yeah, I think he told me that. Yes. And, you know, you're kind of not far off. Anyway, we're getting off. But I think at this point, we've still got a good bit to cover here. Some big matches. So we're four matches in. We've only got three to go, but the show, as we will get into, kind of builds on itself. And this is as good a point as any to take a break, because I don't want to get into the next segment and then kill our momentum. So why don't we take our break, get some refreshment.
I'm going to get some Coors Lights.
Are you?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, they sponsored the show.
Oh, they sure did. They sure did. I like seeing that's something you don't see anymore. The adult sponsorship, device sponsorships, I should say. Like, even with NASCAR, it used to be the Winston Cup, you know, Winston cigarettes. And now it's been a million things since then, but it sure shit ain't cigarettes.
Is that why it was Winston Cup?
Yep. Used to be, for the longest time, Winston Cup, and then I think it became the Nextel Cup and Sprint Cup. Is it Sprint Cup today? I don't know. I should know this, but I'm glad that I don't. Come back here for our second half. Stay tuned. We'll shuffle through the city on a 4th of July, firecrack waiting to blow. Breaking like a rapper who's making his way to the cities of Mexico. Living in a apartment out on Avenue A, at a tall on a corner of town. Had myself a lover who was bonded to go, but I've been broken, I've been busted up since. Love don't play.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
PlaySuite Nation's Justin Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySuite.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the PlaySuite Nation Wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, Main Event, Survey Says, Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective, No Holds Barred, Jeff Learns Wrestling, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. On top of that, we're also dipping into the vault, re-releasing the entire catalog of Where the Big Boys Play for your enjoyment. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is loaded with great content, offering such tremendous shows covering the land of pop culture, such as Geek and Sassy, Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Sunday Groove, PTB In Play, Freak Out Drive-In, Songs with Friends, Looking Forward, Looking Back, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Conversation Comics, DC Post Crisis Management, Marvel Age, and Marvel Age Masterclass, plus weekly pod blasts that cover the gamut of comic topics. The feed is also filled with insightful sports content, including the NBA team, This Week in the NFL, and more.
And you can find all these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com. We cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon while doing your online shopping. And download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Are you ready to fight? Then step into the ring and take on Sting. Here's me and my rival, the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. And there's the total package, Lex Luger, plus more WCW wrestlers with their own ring and cage. The only place for the Ultimate Grudge Match.
Sting flying into the ring. Watch Rick bounce off the roof. Oh no, Rick climbs the pole. Sting comes back with the body slam.
The WCW wrestlers' ring and cage, you put it together. Figure so separately from Galoo.
I dare anybody to take us on.
Welcome back to Survey Says. We are talking Clash of the Champions 9, New York Knockout. Tim Capel here with Andy Savage. And let's get right back to it. No bullshit, no frills. Going right into our next match. And oh, it's a big one. We have got the Steiner Brothers, the aforementioned Steiner Brothers, taking on the Skyscrapers. And Andy, they be clubbering in this match. I was super into it. What about you?
My one note was, whoa, and it was underlined twice.
Yeah, no, that's an appropriate note. You've got Dan Spivey doing a fucking tombstone pile driver as a transition move at one point. Granted, not the most impressive looking tombstone you've ever seen, but a tombstone all the same. Scott absolutely plants him with a Frankensteiner. That looks awesome. And he also does like the weirdest looking, I think Jim Ross called it a fallaway slam, but he kind of just throws Spivey back and dumps himself on his head. Did you make note of this? Because I had no idea what was going on there. And Rick, of course, getting in on the action, just suplexing like crazy. This is the type of thing that, I don't know, I could see criticizing the Skyscrapers for sort of selling too much here. But that just comes too close to bitching about or getting precious about the booking, which I totally hate. It's one of my biggest pet peeves, at the expense of just a damn good match, and that's what I think this is. And I was just sitting here enjoying it. Once again, could have used some more, but this is a, for a TV match in 1989, shit, I will take it. I understand Sid Vicious actually punctured a lung in this match. Yeah. I don't know how or when, but he's going to be replaced in the Skyscrapers by Mean Mark Callis. So, wonder if he'll ever amount to anything. You ever beat anybody?
How would you puncture a lung? Like, would you like break some ribs, and then that would puncture your lung? Because I was like, I actually went back because I was thinking to myself, like, was this the match when he got injured? So I went back to rewatch it if he was like selling more than usual, or he was like legit hurt at some point. Like, I don't know. Like, wouldn't you?
Yeah, he didn't see
that. Like, what are the physics of that or something? Like, how would that
happen? That's a good question. And I mean, I could definitely see you break a rib, that'll puncture a lung for sure. But if that happened, you figure like he would be not selling, but really in agony. And I don't know, he didn't seem like he wasn't acting like any worse for wear from what I could remember of this. So yeah,
well, I didn't know if maybe it was after the match when like the Legion of Doom or the Road Warriors, like they come out and Animal's like just hitting his chest like bam, bam, bam. I don't know if it was that or
could
what.
Yeah, that could be because yeah, this ended in just like a Pier 6 brawl. Bona fide Pier 6 brawl. LOD coming out. Well, Doom actually hit the ring first, and LOD kind of made the save, and it turns into just this slugfest. So it could have happened, yeah, when everybody was getting into it during that segment, which was pretty cool. Now, we do have a somewhat trivial but cool debut during this schmoz that's happening. There's a dude who randomly just sort of appears on camera. You just see him from the back, and he's, I guess he's rescuing woman, right? And watching this, just seeing him from behind, I'm like, who is this 7-foot man with chicken legs wearing yoga pants? And you reminded me this was Nitron. And Nitron is better known in his civilian identity of Tyler Mane, Sabretooth from the first X-Men movie. That's a pretty deep cut, right?
Some pop trivia for you.
Yeah. And he's going to show up again at Starcade 89, the Future Shock Starcade, at a minimum. I don't know. Do we see too much more of him?
I don't know. I've watched a bunch of 90s stuff from that year, but I think he's gone pretty early because I think Woman's gone because then they have Teddy Long with him for a while.
Oh, yeah. True, true. So maybe he washed out quick.
Maybe I'm misremembering it, but like I think Nitron... you're talking about his chicken legs, but like he had like a cool look, right? He had like some widow's peak that was like bleached, and then the side of his hair was like dark, and he had sunglasses on. He kind of looked like I don't know. He kind of looked badass, or he kind of had like a like I like the little bleach part. He looked like that one, like Marvel villain. Was it Tombstone or something that's got like a flat head?
Oh God, that Spider-Man villain.
Yeah,
Tombstone.
I think I had his action figure because he had like a leather jacket on and he kind of had like a widow's peak.
He had kind of a flat top and he was he was an albino individual, which Nitron is. Think about Nitron here, this debut, they don't shoot him from the most flattering angle. His look is very much in keeping with the times of what, you know, counted for badass back then. But here it's just sort of like, what the heck is going on? Who is this guy? And they could have done a better job of that, I thought. So, and that's probably more words than have ever been spoken about Nitron.
Yeah.
Oh, I do like the post-match interview here with LOD and the Steiners. And shit, sign me up. I want to see that Ape Man. You know, them taking on Doom and the Skyscrapers. I want to know, does that happen? Where does it happen? Where can I see it? If it didn't happen, what are we doing?
What match?
So they seem like they're hyping the Steiners and LOD taking on Doom and the Skyscrapers.
Oh.
Like in an Ape Man.
I think they were just talking about that Starcade, because how it was the Iron Man challenge.
This is true,
because
yes.
Those were supposed to be the four teams in there. But I think, Sid got hurt, so they put the Samoan SWAT team guys or the head shrinkers in there instead.
That's right. That makes sense. So, okay. And that's kind of a good way to bookend how this show is going to is actually going to close. So, all right.
Because I think
well,
this
God
was...
damn it, why didn't they do an eight-man tag just to, you know, build up to hype and put some heat on?
Maybe they did on the, like a...
We got to track... We got to do our research here and look for this. And, yeah, we'll have to maybe crowdsource this one. I don't know. Tell us if we're being ignorant in our... the gaps in our 1980s NWA, WCW knowledge... help us out here. Maybe we could. Maybe I'll throw that one to Todd Weber. You know,
one thing I was thinking about now, talking about Hawk and Animal, I really wasn't feeling the Road Warriors and the Freebirds match, and I started thinking about how Hawk and Animal were kind of like, I guess at this point in the 80s, they're kind of like, what more can they do here in the NWA? So it kind of made sense they'd go to WWF. I guess I started analyzing their career too much. When they went to WWF, it's like they had some shit teams to work with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because the Freebirds, I'd rather watch...
Some shit booking to work with, too.
I'd rather watch them wrestle the Freebirds than the Nasty Boys, you know?
Well, the thing of it is, like, wrestle the WWF version of the Nasty Boys in 1990, right? It was just, it was going to be the real shitty, cartoonish, crappy characters, crappy matches. So, yeah, that is sort of a missed opportunity, but also just maybe bad timing because of what the WWF was still in the quote-unquote Federation era. But you're right, though. It does beg the question, what else can they do? They've been such a dominant tag team, still over, but what's left for them in this promotion? I don't know. I guess they, if nothing else, it gave them a refresh in the absence of, you know, having different territories that you can bounce to by this time period. So, we are going into our next match. And it is Lex Luger taking on Brian Pillman. And Luger is defending his NWA United States Heavyweight Championship. I really, really dug this match. Am I nuts, or were you into this too?
No, it was really good. I think this is like a rematch from Halloween Havoc too.
It sure was. And I watched that match as well. I think I've got this one over it. I think this rematch was a little bit better for me. But I just, what I took away here was that it was a good showcase for both of these dudes, in that it's a great look at what they excel at. You know, Luger's power, his offensive dominance, just that arrogance, because he's kind of, you know, he's playing a heel character now. And you got that up against Pillman's agility and his great timing and just that sneaky charisma that Brian Pillman had even early in his career. They complement each other really nicely. And you figure this could be a little bit of a mismatch, right, where you had Pillman doing the somewhat light heavyweight types of matches, types of booking. It's like they weren't totally sure what to do with him. And Luger is just this pure heavyweight. But it works so, so well here. Luger's conditioning, I thought, was very good. It's not like he's blowing up. He's not sucking wind hard. And when he does get tired, he kind of just plays to the crowd, right? It's really smart the way he's drawing heat when he needs to slow it down, because there's not really a rest hold to be found in this match. There's not these long chin lock segments or any of that shit. So I was through and through into this match. It goes looks like a little bit over 12 minutes, but felt like it was longer and just doesn't let up from bell to bell. And at the end, very hot with, so Luger gets kind of the cheap win, hitting Pillman with the chair, and then is wearing Pillman out, after the match, got him in the rack, and Sting makes the save for Pillman. And that's a confrontation, must have felt like a long time coming, with these two kind of being allies and friends, but Luger splitting off, turning heel in the course of this year. So I just think if you'd been watching these shows pretty faithfully in 1989, that probably would have been a big moment, you think?
Yeah. Like, I don't know. It seemed like this whole show was building to matches that kind of didn't really happen because of the Starrcade, the way they formatted it.
Or just weren't very good because of the way they formatted it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But that brings us to our main event, and it is a rematch, as we said, from Great American Bash 89, which did not have a clean finish. Here we must have a winner. It is I Quit, Terry Funk taking on Ric Flair, the NWA Championship, Heavyweight Championship. And Gary Funk, of course, in... What's wrong?
I thought you said Gary Funk.
Gary Funk, Gary Hart, in Terry Funk's corner. who we've talked about. They sort of this odd couple. Well, this is when you have, like, the JTEX Corporation, right?
Yeah.
With you had Hiro Matsuda in there earlier in the year who, like, purchased the Horsemen or whatever, and then you had Gary Hart bringing in Muta, who we're also going to see before this show gets out of here. But let's not beat around the bush. This match really goes for it. Love the way they incorporate the I Quit stipulation with the microphone. Tells a great story, literally and figuratively. Really hard-hitting, of course, brawling all over the place. Funk is in phenomenal shape here. Like, you don't think of Terry Funk looking like much, you know, in terms of his physique, but he really puts it together and looks awesome for this match. There's a... Speaking of those, you know, microphone segments, I like how they, you know, would give each other opportunities to give it up before doing something really devastating. So you get Terry telling Tommy Young to ask Flair, asking before I pile drive him. Flair, no, no, oh God, no. Throughout the whole match. And, I mean, you would think that would get old, but it really doesn't. No. You know, they know how to work. They know how to work us and work this crowd. But pile drive Ric Flair, Terry Funk does twice, in fact. And these are sort of those, like, those wussy 1980s pile drivers, right? You sort of lift the guy up and fall back. They don't look very impactful, but it gets the idea over. And sure, I'm all for people not actually breaking their necks, so fine. My favorite call of all time is the finish here. My favorite Terry Funk call, I should say. So he's been avoiding the figure four all match because he knows if Flair gets him in that figure four, it's going to be over. For as much as he has protested and said, I will never quit, you will not hear this Texan say I quit. Well, Flair gets him in that figure four finally. Holds him in there for a minute. And Terry is saying into the microphone, no, no, never. Oh, God, never. Oh, my leg is breaking. Yes, I quit. Like, it's so over the top, but fuck, that's wrestling, right? I mean, yeah. That's wrestling. This is what you want to see. Love it. Love it. Were you as into this match as me?
Yeah, man. I love this match. I've seen it. Like, I might have seen it more times over the years than the Bash match because I have it on some – there was some random DVD I got years ago at Best Buy, and it was like Piper and Funk. And it was one of those Legends of Wrestling things where it's got a round table because I didn't have the old 24/7, right, where they used to do that. It has like the round table thing, but then it's got a whole bunch of different matches that are on there, and they weren't on other sets. Like, it's got that one, and then there's like it had all the backstage promos for this match too.
Very cool.
Yeah, it seemed like a neat DVD, but the other ones were like, I think there was a Bob Backlund and like Iron Sheik one and like Andre and somebody else, and I'm like, Piper and Funk seems like the best combo. I'm buying that one.
Oh, yeah. You can't go wrong there. I do think that I like this better than the Bash match just for the sake of, you know, that it has a finish and it has a great finish at that. but it's not like the Bash match is appreciably worse by any means. I still, like, that's not diminished at all by this. So, very excellent. And this was not for the world title, was it? This was just kind of a blood feud, yeah. I believe.
I think it was just to settle the score.
Yeah, settle the score, exactly. I love the ending here. So it's like we've still got some time left after the match, and Terry pulls a little face turn here where Ric Flair has won his respect. He's going to shake his hand. Gary Hart doesn't want to have any bit of that, and he kind of gets into it. Muda comes out. Sting comes out, and this ends with Sting and Flair putting their holds on the heels, looking pretty awesome. And, man, we have got our four participants all in ring now for the Iron Man tournament at Starrcade. I'm fucking hot, hyped for Future Shock. You know, bring it on. Kind of wanted to watch that after this, even though I've seen it already, and it's not that good. But this show does its job, you know. It's setting up for Starrcade, absolutely. But that's what these things are supposed to do. They're kind of glorified, almost glorified hype packages, but you get some good matches on free TV, so I can't knock it.
Yeah, I think that's basically what they were doing. They were trying to sell the next pay-per-view and kind of build up to it. But yeah, like you said, I mean, it's like 2 hours, and you're kind of getting some like story progression and some good matches. So usually they're not pretty bad.
I can dig it. I thought it started out kind of slow, and I was like, I don't know if this was maybe the best idea. Probably not going to have a lot to say about these matches, but it builds on itself really nicely. I found myself getting more and more sucked in as it went along. Matches are getting better and better as it went, and I'm the type of viewer, like, it's hard to get my attention if you don't grab me sort of from the jump, you know? But to its credit, this show was able to reel me in, and I thought it was a fine choice. I was real happy with this. Went down easy, quick watch, especially without commercials. I mean, it moves at a good clip. So if you ever wanted to do more of these, I think you have won me over.
Yes, you just said the magic word, because like I've been talking about them for like a while. For like when I was watching this, man, did I not pick a good one? And Tim's gonna like hate this, because yeah, I kind of wasn't into the first like two matches, and I was like, well, that's kind of a dud, and there's no real humor that could hook Tim if the matches aren't good. But then, yeah, it just kind of, once it got past that, then you had, yeah, the Steiner brothers, Rick being goofy. You had, like, the Hoss stuff. And you had some legit good stuff with, I like, the Midnights and the Dudes. And it just, once you hit that match, it was pretty engaging from then on.
Yeah. It, I mean, part of that might just be 1989 is a really good, really watchable year. So maybe not every show is going to have the same effect. Maybe maybe we just really struck gold here. I mean, I would go so far as to say that that Steiner's Skyscrapers match, not that it's much of a match in terms of length, but kind of overlooked, maybe a hidden gem. You know, I don't know if I can go that far, but it's one of those a lot of people are not going to know about it, but if they sat down to watch it, would really dig it. I definitely think so. All right, so you will not swerve me. You know, you won't make me eat those words, regret that I'm now all in on Clash of the Champions.
Well, but you were saying that there's like 30 of them, so it was kind of overwhelming. So I guess it's probably better to just cherry pick.
Yeah, we can cherry pick. So if you ever just want to throw a random show on here and see how it fares, you know, spring another one on me. I'll let you be my guide. Now, Speaking of springing things here, I'm going to put you on the spot and ask real quick before we get out of here. Is Ric Flair versus Terry Funk the feud of the year for 1989?
Shit. Because you had the Macho Man and Hogan at the start of the year, and then you had this for the second half of the year. Damn.
And I think we put this same question out when we talked the year as a whole with Todd, but I don't remember what our conclusion was, so we're going to do it again.
Oh, shit. Well, because you were talking about Terry Funk overacting, like, oh, my leg. You had, like, Hogan overreacting or overacting. Oh, Liz, you know, when she was, like, all knocked out and they're backstage and she's on the stretcher.
Here's the thing.
He's, like, crying and stuff.
The mega powers exploding, that's such a, like, sprawling storyline. It really spans.
Yeah,
like,
it goes back almost
2 years.
Yeah, because you got to go back to 87 when they started at that one Saturday Night's Main Event. Then they went to WrestleMania and Hogan was there and then SummerSlam. So, yeah, it's almost like it's not really a fair comparison because almost Flair and Funk kind of started, you know, it was only like a six-month thing.
It's all contained. Flair and Funk is all contained to 89. So I'll say I don't think that Flair and Funk can compete as a storyline with the mega powers exploding, which, not many things can. But in terms of just the intensity of the matches and the rivalry, it is kind of up there. I mean, I do think it's a better rivalry, better feud than Flair and Steamboat, which was more of that just kind of real sports build and real sports feel.
I'm going to go, actually, I like Flair and Funk more than Steamboat and Flair. Because, I like the intensity. And there was even something on, a prior Clash where Funk came out and he put a plastic bag over his head.
Yes. And
that's like one of the most intense things I've seen in wrestling.
Yeah, to this day. Same here.
So you have that. Then you have these two big matches. I think I'm actually going to go with Funk and Flair over Hogan and Savage too, because I just thought of this, how you're talking about it being this big, long story. It's almost like once they went to WrestleMania and Hogan won the belt, they kind of transitioned it more to Hogan and Zeus and put more of the heat on there, and Macho Man was kind of like secondary.
Yeah, it was over after WrestleMania, which was early in the year. So, awesome storytelling, but for what you storyline, but what you get of it in 89 is not a whole lot. Yeah. And I'm going to be honest, that Hogan Savage match at WrestleMania, I don't think is that great. I mean, it's fine. It's a good payoff, but it's never like knocked my socks off or anything. So, perhaps we are hot taking here, but this is an episode of Survey Says, so what are you going to do?
All right. I'm a mark for the plastic sack thing. So.
Do what?
I'm a mark for the plastic sack. It blew me away when I saw that, so I got to give it to that.
A mark for the plastic sack. Excellent. Well, before we get out of here, I will let you know where you can find me on social media. Twitter, I am at VenomFuckers. No, that's not.
Oh, jeez.
That's not correct at all. Although it is certainly an interesting Twitter handle that you should, well, maybe you shouldn't check out. At your own risk, I'll put it that way. But no, I am on Twitter at Psyche68, C-Y-K-E-6-8. Other podcasts that you can find me on include Talking Pop on Place to Be Nation Pop, as well as the Marvel Age podcast with a whole bunch of motherfuckers also on Place to Be Nation Pop. Andy, anything going on with the Survey Says Insta?
I've been trying to keep it going. Survey_says on Instagram, but I've got a funny text that I didn't want to check my phone during this recording, but it vibrated and I saw this text and I have to share it with you. Like, I'm like,
okay,
maybe I can cut it out of the show if we have to, but my friend, his son's birthday is coming up on the 24th. So for his birthday gift today, they got, I think the new 2K game came out today. My friend sent me a text and it says, "We're doing our draft," to son Maddox. He stops on Greg Valentine and says, "You know, in one of my books, it says it takes him 5 minutes to warm up." And then he says, "I died," and had the little laughing, crying face.
5 minutes. That's like a normal person.
But even he's referencing Greg Valentine, you know, warming up.
Wow. Well, I wonder, is Valentine going to be found in that new 2K game?
He must be if he's drafting him.
Okay. Very good.
Or possibly drafting him.
That's a little bit shocking to me, but I'm for it. All right. With all that being said, I hope you enjoyed this survey. And Survey Says it's time to get out of here. Because coming up next on Movies for Guys Who Like Movies, we've got, appropriately enough, Escape from New York. Great John Carpenter classic. Kurt Russell, of course. Snake Plissken, A Man After My Own Heart. And with that, we've got to go!
Yeah, I'm out at Brooklyn. Now I'm down in Tribeca, right next to De Niro. But I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra. And since I made it here, I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cop in Harlem. All of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Pull me back to that McDonald's. Took it to my stash spot, 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down A Street, off white Lexus. Driving so slow, but BK is from Texas. Me, I'm out that Bed-Stuy. Home of that boy Biggie. Now I live on Billboard, and I brought my boys with me. Say what up to Tata. Still sipping my ties, sitting courtside. Knicks and Nets give me high five. Nigga, I be spiked out. I could trip a referee. Tell by my attitude that I most definitely leave from.